Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. This time of the day, your drive time show with your favorite duo, just keeping you company as you focus on whatever it is that you do to put food on the table. Or what type of food, whether it's sushi, pap, whatever, food you prefer, spaghetti noodles. Well, as long as it's, well, food is food. But, as usual, we're here until the hour of six. But, before we get into today's home run discussion, we have a brief interview. We have a brief interview that we have to conduct before we come back to the usual home run. That is an interview, for the, Global Road Safety Week. So you may want to stay tuned, especially for pedestrians, since you guys are the priority in terms of ensuring, well, to be fair, that's, makes a lot of sense, because a pedestrian, I'm walking. The guy, the motorist, that guy is driving, is much more safe. If I kick, if I kick his car, I would just hurt my knee. But if he, he scratches me with the, with the tire, I'm going to have to see the doctor the next day. So, that's what we have on the table for today. We're going to start with a short interview for the Global Road Safety Week. Of course, that will basically take just a fraction of the beginning of home run, and then when we come back on the other side after the interview, then we will continue with a home run as usual. Just wanted to point that out. Please do stay tuned for the interview, and then after that, home run. Let's take a quick break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A thousand apologies for that extended break, and welcome back to Homerun. And before we get back to that interview that I just pointed out, a few things have changed. With that, we'll come in 5 minutes. So that gives me 5 minutes to introduce today's Homerun topic. Now, with the Hunter virus discussion going wild, and for those that have basically been through the COVID-19 pandemic, and we have all been through that, unless those that were born in 2023, 2024, then probably just still too young to understand what's going on in the world. But we're not here to talk about any specific pandemic. We're just looking at what the African Union has in place in terms of pandemic preparedness. Their words, not mine. You know, in the event of a pandemic, what does the African Union have in store in terms of making sure that, something, whatever it is that is, that pops up. And the pandemics, this is not something new. All you just have to do is read enough history books, then I'm pretty sure you have heard of the Black Death, even though, white people can relate more to that than people from all other parts of the world. Here's the thing. The Black Death is one example that killed a lot of people in medieval Europe that we are talking about here. And all throughout history, in all parts of the world, pandemics do break up. Pandemics do break out. This is not something that's just first happened back in 2019 or 2020. Pandemics pops up. Have been a significant part of human history. So the African Union, so it's not unheard of then to listen to or more like go through what the African Union has in store in terms of preparing themselves to make sure, especially we're talking about preparing themselves to make sure that Africans are safe in the event of a pandemic. Now, what are some of the plans they have? That's what we're going to be talking about in today's Homerun. And this, of course, is coming from a decision out of the 39th AU session that took place back in February in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. So, Dwight?
Decisions aside, it is important, Helmut, because this all started from guess where? You already mentioned it, but guess where? I want people to guess. No, not you. You know. We were at the forefront of all of this. COVID. It all started from jolly old, good old COVID back in 2020. Because guess what? We saw vaccine discrimination. Par excellence on steroids.
Yep.
On everything else that makes it look ugly and unholy. That's what we saw. And the shameful thing is we can't even walk away from it. We as Africa, we felt so bad. I mean, I know Geingob's speech. I remember Ramaphosa's speech. I remember Ruto's speech.
This decision was pioneered by Ramaphosa, by the way.
Yeah. But it all of it, all of these leaders that I'm mentioning, all of them were active except for Ruto. Ruto was... Before Ruto, who was Jomo Kenyatta? No? Yeah, it was... Who was the Kenyatta president?
Is it not? I'm not sure if it was Jomo Kenyatta, but...
Uhuru. It was his son,
yeah,
Uhuru.
Yeah, Kenyatta. There's always a Kenyatta there.
Yeah. So, out of all of this, we are seeing a discussion of Have we turned the tide? Have we achieved a level? Have we bridged a gap? Because this is definitely bridging a gap. But the concern is the countries that responded in Africa's need, ne? Guess who they were? They were all BRICS affiliated, except South Africa.
Yeah.
They were all BRICS affiliated. South Africa tried to go and ask the Americans and the World Health. They tried asking through the World Health, the Americans, you know, can't we reproduce, what was that? The Moderna vaccine?
Yeah.
Just for Moderna to say yes. And then they turn around and say no. Yeah, and then they tried to sue the South Africans for some reason, because I also couldn't understand why are you first saying yes and then you're saying no. And at that stage, it also brought to the front the ugly trade war at that stage between the US and China.
Yeah,
because there's this broad accusation, specifically in the American lawmaking or legislation, and in the South African legislators, because the one thing I don't like about the South African legislators or lawmakers who are willing to say yes for everything America, they're quick to attack their own government for having strategic partnerships with fellow south to south countries. For example, China.
Yeah.
China now has a lot of industrial investments in South Africa. We, Namibia, are trying to compete against South Africa to get those same investments coming to our country. But we can't do it because the South Africans can say, listen, we've got, their ministries can show up and say, listen, we've got all these factories with all these skilled South Africans. Come to us. We will anyway sell it to the Namibians. Namibia is only now waking up through the help of the Germans to technically upskill our Namibians. Our Namibians we're now taking our vocational training colleges to the next level. Some of them have now been declared as slightly more or higher levels of higher learning. Like they've got now higher levels that they can dispense in terms of qualification. So what have we been treating these institutions as if we couldn't attract the same, if we can see we can't attract the same kinds of investment?
Look, when it comes to African countries' relationship with non-Western countries, this is something that if you watch the interview between Tucker Carlson and Vladimir Putin, was that last year?
2024.
One of the questions Tucker Carlson asked was in reference to just how powerful the West is when it comes to information warfare. And you have to understand that. I think this is the part that a lot of African countries don't understand. Information is everything.
It's key.
Information is everything. And now that it wasn't until I went through this, this whole, the list of 39th session AU declarations and declarations and decisions. Now, on the pandemic preparedness. The pandemic preparedness sort of like took me back to the to the ongoing yes, no, maybe between a lot of African countries in relation to the America First the health policy. But more on that example, because I found something that links into this this declaration that is going to be a source of our reference for today. But before we continue with Homran, we have an interview to conduct, like I just pointed out earlier. So we'll continue on the other side just after the quick break.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Same. Don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe udite okoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge patafano na Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event.
And coming back there from the particular ad break or the extended ad break right there, and joining us live on air from the Namibia, from the National Road Safety, I almost said Namibia. I love saying Namibia, but the National Road Safety Council specifically, we're talking to Shidwe Kadumbumbo from the National Road Safety Council and, joining us specifically, Shido, thank you. Welcome. Can I say Shido here live on air? Or should I stick to the full name pronunciation?
You can say Shida.
Shida, thank you very much. Shida, obviously, as we're looking at the important message that the National Road Safety Council will be bringing, and this is the Global Road Safety Week. Obviously, you're here to share more about this. When is it going to happen? And all these particularly important questions and particular talking points. But firstly, can you just say hello to the listeners and obviously just before we start with the first question.
Oh, okay. Thank you for having me once again at Eagle FM. My name is Shidoye Shida Kadobungo from National Road Safety Council, and good afternoon to the listeners once again.
Now, as we start off, Shida, with this particular global road safety campaign, could you tell us why is it important for Namibia to commemorate Global Road Safety Week?
Oh, okay. Namibia stayed with the rest of the world to commemorate this week because Namibia also stand works with the second decade of action for road safety of 2021 to 2030, which calls for urgent action to reduce road traffic deaths and injuries by at least 50%. So under this mandate, that is why we as a National Road Safety Council spent with World Health Organization to commemorate this day. It isn't just about commemorating the day. It's also about raising awareness and sharing our road safety messages.
And as we also look at specifically the next question that highlights another important aspect for you also to share with us on, is also why are vulnerable road users, for example, like pedestrians and cyclists, being part of the focus this time?
In line with the theme, that one, it came in line with the theme because the theme for this year is make walking and cycling safe. So we decided to focus particularly on pedestrians as well as cyclists because they are at most greatest risk of being of crashes because they are mostly unprotected, unlike any other road users.
Mm-hmm. And also, what key activities has the National Road Safety Council also planned for this year's particular event?
Oh, okay. We have got two different kind of activities planned for this commemoration. On the 15th of May, which is Friday, we are launching the Global Road Safety Week officially. This will be taking place at NADO Augusta NADO. That is the venue, starting from 9 a.m. to 11. We will be having keynote speakers such as the Minister of Transport and Works, Honorable Veiko Nekunti. He'll be the keynote speaker there. And then we'll also be having other dignitaries, and we'll also be having other stakeholders that will also be joining us. And we're also having a representative from the World Health Organization, Mr. Banta, who's also going to help award there. And proceeding on to the next day's activity, we will be having a walk and run activity, which we had opened links to the line for them to sign up, and they did so. Indeed, they really showed up in more numbers that we expected, and It seems like people really are really into wanting to know as to what Road Safety Day is all about, and they are ready to come hear the message and everything that we have to share with them on that day. So this Saturday, the walk and run activity is starting, probably the arrival of people, we're expecting the public and as well as those that are registered online and so forth to show up as from 5:30, because we want to have the run a bit around 6 to 7.
And that's now a.m.
That is now a.m. on the 16th of May, which is a Saturday.
Yep. And then still staying on the specific walk and run event, how will the walk and run event raise the road safety awareness in this particular aspect?
Okay, the event will raise awareness about the danger faced by pedestrians and cyclists and encourage safer and more responsible road use by all. Because not only that the people are going to take part in the walk and run activity, there will also be messages, there will also be information shared after this where they will come get. There will be also branded materials such as hats, such as T-shirts that will also be getting the message about our road safety.
And then just heading into our next question. Now, according to the latest data report of 2025 to 2026, vehicle overturn accidents and animal-related crashes have increased, with Omaheke and Ochotonjupa recording the highest fatalities. What can be done to reduce these crashes in these high-risk regions?
Measures are put in place already. Like the National Road Safety Council mostly runs a campaign that goes out to different regions, whereby we go educate the importance of using headlights on and using your safety belts, using your checking your tire pressures and all these things. And on top of that, we can strengthen road safety awareness campaigns in rural and high risk areas like Omaheke and Oshodanchupa. And we can also maybe improve the law enforcement to reduce speeding and reckless driving. And we can also educate drivers on animal-related crash risks and encourage cautious driving in livestock areas, and as well as work with communities to control livestock movement near roads and improve road signage. In most cases, some of these accidents are caused because road signages are not visible, or maybe they had disappeared, or they are not there at all.
And then just one last particular question to you, Sheetha, in terms of if there's anything else that you want to let the listeners know specifically that I might not have asked, you still have the opportunity to do so before we end.
Oh, okay. I would like to urge the listeners out there and Namibian Nation out there to please join us on Saturday. It's a public event. You're more than welcome. Even if you didn't manage to register online and so forth, you are more than welcome to show up at our offices. The work is beginning at our office, which is a National Road Safety Council. It is an independent venue, and it's on the other side. It's parallel to Moses Garwep. When you're at Toyota Pukavet, it's opposite there. So we are urging everyone to join us in that. And as you all know, that the road accident fight is not just an individual thing. It's not just our responsibility as people that are supposed to carry it out. It's also everyone's thing. So we need to hold hands and come together and come share, come teach each other, come also encourage and engage on such important things.
100%, 100%. And on that note, joining us obviously on the line from the National Road Safety Council, dear listeners, that was Madam Shida Kadumbungo. Thank you once again for taking the time to talk to us and the listeners. And obviously, we hope to see a lot of the listeners show up on Saturday.
Yes.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
And on that note, dear listeners, we're going to take another break. We come back right after that with the rest of the Home Run.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. 29 minutes left to the hour of 5. So that means from now until the hour of 6, we just a standard Home Run. As usual, and that's where we talk about whatever it is that we have on the menu. And for today, we have the African Union's pandemic preparedness, highly refined strategy that they have, from the look of things, been perfecting for a while. Now, I was about to explain, before we went on that break/interview, it's a Home Run break, but, it wasn't your regular break, but one thing that I found interesting is that from December of last year, I believe from November, December of last year, one thing that I've observed is, for those of you that follow, continental politics here on the African continent, is that, this health package, America First Global, is it Global Health Strategy that was just, this is just a proposal that was put together and then pitched to a lot of different African countries. And they had an option to say yes, no, maybe. Now,
we will see if we will be there.
Yeah, we'll see if we'll be there. Of course, some countries like, I think Eswatini, you're good.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So,
it's been a long time.
I know,
since
right?
Since I heard, it's an internal joke. Don't worry, guys.
Yeah. So, the thing is, Eswatini said yes, Uganda said yes, and, I believe it's I'm not sure about Djibouti, but Rwanda also said yes. There was not much of a tit for tat in terms of, this is an invasion of my privacy. This is asking for too much access to my resources, like we had with Zambia. And, Kenya, in case of Kenya, I think the Kenyan President William Ruto signed the agreement in Washington in December. But when he flew his way home and when he landed in Kenya, the parliament, the NGOs, there's one specific NGO in Kenya just, dragged the whole agreement to the Supreme Court, and the court was like, yeah, man, this is way too much privacy, access to, to information. Now, the thing is,
I like that NGO.
Not only do I like the NGO, I have so many questions, on, to the Kenyan president on that part. What the heck was he thinking? And this is now. This is this now the part of access to information that that Ghana pointed out and Zambia pointed out and Zimbabwe pointed out in terms of in terms of signing that health that health aid deal with with the US. There's something that you will find interesting on that's on the 39th ordinary sessions decisions and declarations document that you just shared. That's on page 125. Page 125. Members. Page 125. That's under preparedness and response coordination platform. It says that Africa CDC. That's the African extension of the Center for Control Center for Disease Control. Africa CDC and WHO WHO Afro should consolidate preparedness and epidemics response into potential platform using the IMS ST model anchored on the fourth ones principle. Don't worry about all the abbreviations. The next part is the most interesting one. That's the second bullet. Member states member states should finalize data sharing agreements with Africa CDC and prioritize real time surveillance, digital interoperability, and predictive epidemic intelligence. Integrating laboratory genomics, genomic climate, and community data.
What, Helmut?
Look, I read that as like a.
Do you know that? No, wait, Helmut. Let's park this bus right now, and it's a bus that you and I don't even own. Let's park this bus right now.
That was my exact reaction.
I just, earlier today, I attended a specific conference held by Huawei. And obviously, they highlighted to their customers and partners, as they now call them. You know, the IT sector guys are now talking about partners and no more customers. So it's now like a partnership situation. But the presentations, the last two presentations that were done, the actual last one spoke about how, especially in the e-governance field of things, because all that is e-governance.
Yeah, definitely.
And that e-governance is always ignored by specifically the bureaucrats that work in the government and the lawmakers and the executive, the politicians appointed.
Mm.
They all don't want to sign a piece of paper probably that has to procure all necessary ICT infrastructure that literally moves the whole of the public sector from, from being in the dark ages, as we can call it right now, to actually being at the forefront of service delivery. They don't want to sign off on such large amounts of money, because such large amounts of money, it's not always something that you go and declare that you need a server for Ministry of Home Affairs. You need a server for Ministry of Health. You need a server for Ministry of Defense. You need a server for Ministry of the Safety and Security part of Home Affairs.
Yeah.
So you have Home Affairs with its side, with its server.
And the directorate.
And the directorate that is for Safety and Security needs its servers. And then you've got education with lower or basic education and higher education requiring their own, the youth sports and whatever other functions of that ministry, of MASAC, the super ministry, each one needs their own servers. So it's a lot of computing ability. I'm not even talking about AI. It's a whole bunch of data centers.
It's just the hardware.
It's just the hardware. Hardware just for each directorate, so that each directorate has their function. Here's the worst case scenario. We spoke about data interoperability back in 2024.
Yeah.
Helmut, the migration from physical files to digital filing is going to be a nightmare for our government specifically, and for our regional authorities, and for our local authorities. Because for some reason, we think ICT is, you know what, if it still switches on, it works. No. Every year, you must, every 5 years, you must replace the thing. Or every 3 years, or every 2 years, you need to replace the thing. Because then a new one comes out. Because new cybersecurity threats or cyber threats are detected, and they try to find vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
Like the one presenter right there, because the last two presenters were all two South Africans. The last presenter highlighted specifically how one American company buying another American company there in Silicon Valley has made the whole of the developing world nervous, primarily because of the pricing strategy that might be deployed.
Yeah.
And this is about, have you ever heard of virtual drives or virtual hardware, virtual storage capacity?
Just virtual?
It's virtual.
It's not based on anything hardware?
It's based on the hardware.
Okay,
but the hardware has its physical hardware space.
Yeah.
And it has capacity for virtual storage capacity. Have you ever heard of something like that?
Okay, now I'm confused. Isn't that just a fancy term for cloud storage?
No. Yeah, they can. That is basically what enabled the cloud storage discussion. But here's the thing. Let's call it the virtual storage space, is literally, it was a lovely thing that obviously popped up that I started seeing in my statistics as well, because it's literally, they literally use the word partitioning from what you understand from statistics, if you've ever done statistics on university. So statistics on university, there is the partitioning theorems. There's like two of them that you learn, if you've ever learned them, to the end of the course. And the partitioning theorems were based upon how do you, partition an equal space into actual equal parts.
Like compartments. Yeah.
So it's not mathematics. It's the opposite of maths, because statistics is more understanding the language than actually doing the calculation, because it will automatically just tell you which calculation to work out. Now, when I try to understand from my IT buddies, why are they doing literally the same statistics that we're doing? Because I asked them, listen, do you guys do the same? Because I saw the same lecturer teach us, and then I saw the same lecturer walk across to the IT business. And I asked him, listen, and I asked my one buddy, listen, does he have an office on your floor? Because I've never seen him have an office in the IT building. And he said, no, Dwight. His office is actually way downstairs at the engineering office. That's not the statistics lecturer. He literally had to lecture like four faculties. He was probably the only statistics lecturer for a long time at my alma mater. He was sort of like seconded by another guy, who was actually a mathematician, but technically his only job was just statistics. He was so good, he literally, and I think many people who studied at NASTEN at Polytechnic know who I'm talking about. He was so good. Literally, this lecturer. But anyway, then the IT guys tell me, or the IT buddies I had, no, Dwight, we do your statistics. The work we're exposed to is your work, yeah, plus our work. And I said, so you guys get the basics and then the added on. Then they said, yes, because they have to understand algorithms. The math guys try to teach us about logarithms, but logarithms is only applicable if you're doing banking. And the people in my classes, none of us could actually just go directly to banking, because Namibia's banking wants purely accounting, purely, what's that other subject's name? Actuarial sciences.
Oh, yeah, that.
Which allows the person to become a trader. And you must be like a hardcore economist.
You know, ever since I came across that whole, is it actuarial science? I look at everyone that's claiming to be a trader. I'm like, seriously, dude? Anyway,
But that's literally the aim. That's literally the level of work here, because the hardware itself, what those guys are talking about in that document,
yeah,
they're talking about data interoperability. They're talking about putting aside the budgets, countries coming together to literally acknowledge that they first need to sort out these basics. But here's the thing, Helmut. Here is the thing. If we could have done it, if countries said in, was this a declaration of decisions?
No, this is a decision.
Decision.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I know.
The reason I'm saying, guys, is because we are, or the AU is saying yes to a decision, because in very few scenarios do they actually deliver.
That is why I went directly to that paragraph. Because if you just look at that paragraph, the whole of today's home run can be summed up in that paragraph, including, you know, you already made a point in a reference to this, you know, that also pointed to this paragraph, which is, the whole sort of like using, you know, like manufacturing a vaccine using someone's intellectual property,
yeah.
Which is, you know, in the beginning they said yes, and then halfway through they changed their mind and say no. And now the question you now ask is why? And that's a very important question. Like, why they say yes and then turn around and actually were more like, refuse later. There are a lot of reasons I can think of before you even get to this document.
Mm.
One, research takes years.
Yeah.
And a lot of money.
Yep.
Years and a lot of money. On my Sunday show, I was talking about the scientifically proven benefits of fasting to the human body. Now, this is based on Dr. Osumi's research, and he's been doing this research since the late 1980s.
Mm.
But he only reached a conclusion and won a Nobel Prize on it in 2016.
I hope he was alive. Was he fasting on himself?
Oh, he is alive. Oh, no. I think he was just doing research. He wasn't fasting.
Because I really hope he was alive. Because in many scenarios, it's a question also of looking at how does this thing actually translate in the broader scheme of things. If you research something and you know, you have to rely on third parties.
The level of peer review that goes into you standing up in science for a Nobel Prize.
Mm.
Yeah. Critics will be on your neck left, right, and center. So that means for you to get there, you have gone through hell.
Mm.
Now, if you look at, I think 1987, 88, 89 there to 2016, that's how long it took Homeboy. Now, you can only imagine how much funding he needed to reach that conclusion. So, the point you made in terms of saying yes and no in terms of sharing quality, is it ingredients of the needed vaccines? Can we? This statement is saying members should finalize data sharing agreements with Africa CDC and prioritize real time surveillance. Someone will have to explain that before you freak people out. And
it's the other surveillance, Amut, the one you find in public.
Come again?
It's when you, have you ever looked up at our, like in the street of ours,
mm-hmm.
John Ludwig?
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of surveillance cameras. Have you seen it?
Windhoek is riddled with those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's leveraging that same infrastructure, mm-hmm. to also play a dual role in terms of disease response, or what Namibia loves calling it, disaster response. But so far with us, disaster response so far has only been environmental or weather or climatic based. It's mm-hmm. either you are being washed away or you are baking to death, literally in the natural environment you find yourself.
You know, one thing they said, must be shared in between member states?
Yeah.
Genomics.
Yeah, I see it. Climate data, community data, integrating
genomics. That has to do with genetics, right?
Yeah,
gene sequencing. That's the term. Thanks.
And what's the other one? And what's that thing they love calling it, man? DNA sampling from live animals, from live humans.
All those things require a lot of expensive medical hardware.
Not just hardware, the people. There's only the one country on this continent that knows how to respond.
South Africa.
Yeah. There's only one country that knows how to respond. It can respond to its own crises. It can respond to its own crises. Now, I love this suggestion, this specific, the preparedness and response coordination that you read out.
Mm-hmm.
I love it, but I can already see the issues. I can already see the issues. You know, Helmut, the headache is not about, and I know people might say I'm too realistic, I'm too pessimistic, I must see the best part in us Africans. But, you know, I can only see the best part in us Africans now. If we actually listen to each other on the positives, and we actually literally put money together to actually achieve the outcome.
That second one.
That's it. If we put the money, our own money, for our own goals and for our own benefit and our own objectives, we can achieve it. Helmut, I had to sit, like I said earlier today, I could sit there going like, you know how many awesome Namibians we do have? Yes, there might be a few that can actually do, that can come up with a startup company that the Namibian government just has to subsidize, invest in. Because how is it that you have a VW in this world? How is it that you've heard of the 21 or the 12 scientists, the American scientists that have died or disappeared?
Oh, disappeared, yeah.
A lot of those guys worked for American government companies.
Yeah.
Let me say it again. They worked for U.S. government companies. Companies owned by the U.S. government. Yes, they are SOEs, but I really want us to look at our SOEs as national symbols, but not just as employment creators. The unfortunate thing, obviously, is that NASFAF is being absorbed, and obviously, it seems like everybody there would be downgraded. They would call it a downgrading, but they're still keeping their jobs, but they would now actually become government employees, actual government employees. And for the other SOEs to actually stand up and actually champion something.
Yeah.
You know, like NHE builds actual houses, sells them at below market rates. I'm just giving an example, NHE, just letting you know.
Actually, that would be a brilliant idea.
That would be a brilliant idea, yeah. But you sell to everyone. You don't just sell to government. You first sell to the government guys, get them out of the market. Then you sell to everyone else so that the market pricing comes down. And that way, we can actually start, you know, looking at things. But here's the thing, Helmut. In some cases, where do outbreaks happen? I'm not talking about COVID. Don't think about COVID. COVID was a weird anomaly with a lot of it being associated to a wet market. But we all know what was the big concern. The researchers got to the wet market in Wuhan a whole year later, which technically means that the evidence could have disappeared, or technically has disappeared. So technically,
researchers were implicated in the outbreak in the first place. Yeah.
And when researchers went to go and investigate, they said, okay, we found nothing. Then they were still told, you are lying.
I think that's the issue with, little bit of a downside when it comes to science. Because all this research into, what did they call it? There's a term that that was used a lot during the whole, in most of the interviews that I watched with Anthony Fauci.
Mm.
Yeah, it's gain of function research. Where they take an ordinary virus and basically, or any ordinary pathogen, and basically give it, superpowers, and see that if it mutated into this specific form and started causing this problem, how do we respond to it? Which I think it's a little bit of an overkill.
It is.
Yeah.
And the obvious other thing is also, why are they busy playing around with these particular pathogens?
If it doesn't have the function, why are you giving it the function?
An extra function, yeah.
Yeah.
So
it doesn't have the capability to jump in between species and start, maybe because there are some pathogens that are just strict to, to different, that only infect different species.
Mm.
Yeah, they don't jump across species. Now you are just taking it from a monkey and see how it will respond in a mouse and therefore a pig and a human. Why?
Yeah.
Just why?
Why? Or, like the other particular explainer that I saw was apparently there's a lot more scarier stuff out there than COVID itself.
Yeah.
There are super viruses. There are viruses so big, so dangerous that we are lucky that the thing can't come in any, not even into our mouth. We can't even breathe it in.
You know, one thing I like about, one thing I think we, that is a very good, I know it's a very odd thing to say, you know, the good thing about dangerous viruses, they don't have, it's impossible for them to spread in the same way that COVID-19 did.
Yeah.
Because, victims die almost instantly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the spreading of the disease doesn't,
and it's actually
doesn't
not
happen at the same.
It's actually not beneficial for the thing to be in the host.
Yeah.
In some of those cases.
Have you seen what's some of the most scary movies I basically watched in terms of medical field related movies?
As long as it's not The Centipede.
No, it's Panic at Rock Island. I believe it's an Australian movie. Yeah, the movie is based on, and it's a movie, guys. It's a movie. Just a reference.
It's just a movie.
It's just a movie.
Yeah.
Now, the movie is based on, on an island called Rock Island. A concert was being held at that island.
Mm.
But what everyone did not know is that, a couple of years earlier, the military, was conducting its own research with a bacteria called B9K,
yeah,
which they had, they basically had a bunch of tunnels with it. Now, one of the guys that was working on that virus now was trying to sort of like bring awareness to the people to show that, guys, the military is cooking something way more dangerous than they should be cooking.
Mm.
Now, to try and basically prove that, he broke into what they called a hot lab. This is where they keep all the dangerous pathogens. And then ended up basically unleashing that whole thing into the... he ended up being infected, but it was contained.
Mm.
It's just that concert attendees that were at that event, those that wanted their quote-unquote privacy, ended up getting in a tunnel, and that tunnel was a hotspot. It was ground zero for for that disease.
Yeah.
So they ended up contracting it after their sweet honeymoon. They came back to the public and basically spread it with everyone else. The disease was so deadly, because you basically start... you develop blisters everywhere and start bleeding everywhere. And when I say everywhere, yes, everywhere, including the spots you're imagining. Now,
directors of movies, they always try their best to be dramatic.
I know, they were super dramatic. And then now, so of course, the military comes in, puts the whole island on lockdown to contain the whole thing. Yeah, but the thing is, during the whole COVID-19, when they were talking about the whole gain of function research and all that,
yeah,
I couldn't help but to keep going back to that movie. I'm like, so hang on a second, there's a part that is portrayed in this movie where you have, researchers basically playing around with microorganisms, giving them power they shouldn't be giving them.
Yeah.
And that, just like anything else, well, they are going to escape.
Yes.
And when they do... you have chaos on your hands. Well, the internet at some point was a secret, strictly for the military.
Yep.
Here we are. And so was the microwave, by the way.
So too was GPS, apparently.
Yeah, so was GPS.
Yeah.
So now it's out in the general public. But anyway, when it comes to information sharing, when I read through this part in this decision, I couldn't help but keep going back to what Ghana was explaining, that we can't sign this agreement because it has a lot of data privacy implications on our part. And then the same point was made by Zimbabwe. It was Zimbabwe first that made that point. And in Kenya, it was just blocked by the court after an NGO said, Mr. President, we don't know what the heck you signed or whether you read this whole thing, but this is ridiculous. This is a lot of access to private citizen information. Zambia then just recently followed suit. You know, at first the claim was that the U.S. was asking a little too much access to the country's natural resources. But when the when the Zambian government came out to make a formal statement as to why they didn't sign an agreement, the overreach in terms of access to information is one of those things that they pointed out.
Mm.
Okay, yeah, you know what? Well, we want the money, but that's a lot of access to information. But the access to information and the natural resources and all that aside, one thing that you can see from that is that Africa is not medically prepared to deal with HIV, polio,
no, but
and so TB.
South Africa has Mr. Wonder Drug, Hamad.
Oh, no, just hang on a second. Africa.
What was his name? Something Veer. I almost said Casanova Veer.
Casanova, seriously? Of all the words you can think of, Casanova.
South Africa developed the drug last year, Hamad.
That's one naughty virus. But look, the thing is, the fact that you have a lot of African countries that that need, from the look of things, that need money, because one of the things that the America First Global Health Strategy explains is that it's set to basically help developing countries with funding so that they can help combat three diseases that are mentioned that I remember clearly. That's TB, HIV, and HIV and polio. Mm. Now, the thing is, the dilemma now, and you have to understand most of this, especially in terms of the implications that Zambia was going to face. They stopped picking up their calls, but the thing is, the implication that a lot of analysts tried to look at was that if Zambia does not sign this agreement, they will have a hard time dealing with millions of patients that need HIV medications.
Yeah,
yeah, and millions of patients that needs polio medications and TB medications. I'm like, okay, the whole African continent, we need a foreign country to provide us with medicine that we clearly should have invested in, because I'm emphasizing these three diseases, and it's a good thing they are also a reference, the America First Global Health Strategy, because they are as old as time.
Mm.
We had all the time to invest in our own research and development to figure out what is the best way to combat them. But to this day, we still need aid to combat the diseases.
Yeah, we will still need aid. We will always need aid, Hamad. My concern, or actually all of our concern in Africa, would be, so how are we going to look? Okay, you were on the aid side of things, yeah. Meaning the DIY, the do-it-yourself component.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lovely little part here that Ramaphosa in this decision highlighted. Apparently we need. So financing sovereignty. You are on aid.
Oh, yeah, that bad.
So the AU should reaffirm the triple PR as a strategic investment, not a recurrent emergency cost, and systematically link preparedness benchmarks to predictable financing through the AFEF, the pandemic fund instruments, and domestic resources. So technically, let's budget properly. Let's allocate money into the adequate mechanisms that exist. I'll say it again. Let's budget properly. But here's where I think things are probably going to slip on a major banana peel, Helmut, and slide out the gate.
Remove the probably.
Okay, so it will.
Uh-huh.
Do you know why? First and foremost, at the heart of what has caused coups on this continent has been local populations in most countries being dissatisfied with service delivery. I'll say it again, dissatisfied with service delivery. You go to when that Malian president was toppled,
mm-hmm.
The people were celebrating out in dust streets. The same in Niger, the same in Burkina Faso. They were celebrating in dust streets. Now, first and foremost, the first thing that everyone tells you how you actually bring development forward is you start building a whole bunch of roads. You start building a whole bunch of buildings like schools and what's the other thing's name? And hospitals. You then go on this massive stimulus drive as a government in order to firstly upscale standard of living or service provision or whatever. You make sure there's a whole bunch of electric cables being installed that connects rural communities and disadvantaged communities in urban areas. And you bring lights to people, you bring drinking water to people, and you empower local authorities. And then from there, you now watch everything function. Because the next level would be positioning adequate facilities. You know, like you now need to hire doctors and nurses for the medical facilities that you built. You now need to hire teachers, Helmut, to staff the school facilities that you built. And then you need to start training, and then and the population needs to start reaching a specific adequate level of the intense human capital investment you've done as a country, and so it goes forward. But a lot of these countries, I'm now talking above DRC, which probably might include DRC as well, they have to prove that they've actually become stable firstly, that they've actually achieved levels of internal investment in themselves, like Namibia. We bragged last year at that, what was that document that we looked at, the 1,500 page thing? No, was it the 700 one?
What's that?
The one about the capital projects.
Is it,
it became smaller last year for some reason. I didn't see this year's one.
Is it medium-term expenditure framework?
Yeah, the expenditure framework document. So we... Right there, we could deduce Namibia is sourcing at least, what was it, 60% locally. The money...
I think it was about 70 or 80% locally.
Yeah, so it was 70 or 80% last year, yeah. So Namibia is sourcing 70 or 80% locally to fund its own projects in the country.
Congratulations.
Congratulations on us. But is it the same thing, let's for example say, in Cameroon? Is it the same thing potentially in a Ghana? Is it the same thing potentially in... a Niger? Is it the same thing in Chad? We don't know if Chad is stable anymore. Is it the same thing in Central African Republic or even Somalia, where all the warlords are in government?
I'm glad you mentioned Africa Central Republic, because that's one of my favorite countries on the African continent, thanks to Jean-Bertel Bokassa.
I hope it's not the guy that went and called himself emperor.
Yeah, the one, Napoleon Bonaparte's favorite, you know, number one fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the one.
Exactly that guy.
The capital city of African Central Republic is Bangui. If you look up...
look up on Google or look up in the sky?
Only, you can look up on Google, YouTube, but look. It's... It's terrible. Sorry, I tried to find the politically correct term. But the thing is that this interoperability that we are talking about here, interoperability in data, really?
Yeah.
We have to start with the interoperability with communicating.
With countries, with each other.
Yeah.
No, no.
Let's start from
your own government.
Working
in silos, remember?
Auditor General will always pop up.
Working in silos.
Yeah, that's actually a very good template to point out. Well, thanks to the Office of the Auditor General's reports, now we know that a lot of ministries in Namibia are working in silos instead of working with each other, because they have a lot of overlapping, a lot of overlapping mandates.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, every time that one ministry is looking at one mandate that overlaps that overlaps into another ministry, it's like, whatever it is that they're working on that report, they don't consult the other ministry.
Yep.
There's not a single time that if every ministry will not have mandates that overlaps or fall into a different ministry. Well, that's just impossible.
Mm.
Because just take education, for example. If they want to build a school, that school will need water.
Mm.
So, Ministry of Agriculture shows them. Electricity. Mines energy
and
comes up.
And let's say if the school is in a rural area, it'll probably need a hostel.
Yep. And now you have the rural, urban and rural development pops up. Ministry of Finance is central to all. And you have,
Ministry of Health has to be there as well, which is to all as well. Because Ministry of Health has to respond to all needs.
They will all have to show up.
Yeah. And now we're not talking about AI ambulances, please. Or an e-health policy, please. We're not.
They only have enough network to download a video.
So we need people to respond when issues do happen.
So the way I'm picturing that whole working in silo is that if that's happening in Namibia, chances are very high it's happening across the continent.
Or it could be worse across the continent.
Chances are very high it is. We looked at one report. I just have to find that report where Uganda and Tanzania said one of the reasons why the officials from Tanzania and Uganda said the reason why they have a problem, one of the biggest problems they have in execution of their duties is because they have people within the organization playing politics because they are from different political parties.
Isn't it the Pan-African Parliament report that was looking at why certain laws continentally can't achieve consensus between each other?
Yeah.
Because the guys come from far, they come sit here, and then they play politics against each other.
Yeah, you see, a Pan-African Parliament is an excellent example.
Yeah.
Have you seen their sessions?
Actually, did they have sessions already? Yeah, they did.
Just find one.
No, they did have, back in last month.
Uh-huh.
In April. I still have to go see what happened there.
Of course.
But I didn't see any, rock star behavior.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, we first have to start by communicating.
Yeah.
And making sure that we are on the same page. Yeah. And the biggest problem here is that this is treading the line between data interoperability is treading the line between sharing information and national sovereignty.
Mm.
And national sovereignty in terms of information that must strictly remain a state information or something that is just strictly for the state.
Yeah.
Which brings up the discussion of all that data that you're going to collect, where is it going to be stored?
Yeah.
Because if it's in Silicon Valley,
it's defeating the purpose, first and foremost.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Or if it's in China, it's also defeating the purpose.
As long as it's outside the African continent.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter on which continent, as long as it's outside of Europe, Russia, China, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And even if you were to build a data, take for example, you're like, okay, you know what, let's get Meta or Facebook, Meta or Google to come and build a data center here. Here's the thing. That will still be a dumb idea because...
I will also say no. I'll also refuse that suggestion. Do you know why, Helmut?
Now, what's the solution?
Do you know why?
Uh-huh.
I'll say no to that. It's literally what happened to China, or what America and Australia started doing to China in the first Donald Trump term. Remember the accusations of a trade war because of Chinese technology companies.
So
the Americans were starting to use their laws and their clout to try and push Chinese companies basically into a corner, but no one is doing this to American companies.
You know where that brings us?
Yeah.
Our own hardware. Our own software.
Our own skills.
Thank you.
Our own electricity.
Which brings us to one thing.
Our own manufacturing. Because, manufacturing is here on, this is 0.4.
0.5. Yeah.
Regionalized manufacturing and local production. But here's the thing there. Once again, I just see South Africa. Maybe Kenya. Kenya can probably, because I know Ruto tries to say yes, and then he goes and signs agreements that his own Supreme Court...
Yeah, his own people and the courts are like...
Not even for the money, Brian, can you sign this? Not even for the money should you even be allowed to sign this thing.
I don't know what you were thinking, but nah.
I don't even know why you went and said yes to this. You just said, yeah, wait, I'm here for the food.
You should have just said, you know what, let me call some.
We'll take it with us.
Yeah, then we'll do consultations.
To Nairobi, have national consultations and have my audit, my attorney general look at it.
Yeah.
But I won't say yes.
Attorney general, and then they tell you, you know what, according to this and this and this.
This is a rubbish deal. Just throw it in the toilet.
You know, just to toss it away.
Yeah, just throw it in the dustbin. I almost said in the toilet pot. But yeah.
Yeah, bro, it's just, you know, I just hand it to me and then it was given a pen.
I've got a nice pen. Look here. I'm signing. Look at me. I'm signing. Awesome stuff, eh?
Which is like, so this guy just survived a protest.
Isn't it already two protests?
Yeah.
He survived the one of 2024 and he survived the one of... Was there not one of last year?
What was that about?
It was two. The one of 2024 was the one about the...
That's the tax bill.
The tax bill. The one of last year was because of the outstanding crimes that the police had committed because of another protest a little bit earlier.
Oh, he was facing...
It was last year, yeah.
Basically, the entire Kenyan government was being blamed for the whole... Mara situation, but commercial break.
Yeah.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was... Oh, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm. Just give it more eyes. Anyways, long story short. Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long. Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Sixteen past the hour of 5. Before we continue, let's take a live read.
The IUM's the International University of Management, IUM's traffic advisory for the IUM winter convocation taking place in Ongwediva. The International University of Management, IUM, is proud to announce a historical milestone as it hosts its first ever winter convocation in northern Namibia. The ceremony will take place on Friday, the 15th of May, 2026, at the Ongwediva Trade Fair Center and is expected to attract a large number of graduates, families and dignitaries. Members of the public are advised to expect increased traffic volumes in and around Ongwediva, particularly near the Trade Fair Center, between 6 a.m. and 3 p.m. on the day of the event. If you will be attending, please take note. Gates will open at 6 a.m. and will strictly close at 7 a.m. No entry will be permitted after 7 a.m. Guests are also informed that babies and toddlers will not be permitted inside the venue. Attendees are encouraged to plan their journey in advance. Arrive early and join IUM in celebrating this memorable occasion. The public is urged to exercise patience and caution to ensure the safety of all road users during this important occasion, and IUM extends its heartfelt congratulations to all graduates and looks forward to celebrating this memorable event together. Thank you for your cooperation.
Vilvicha University 2026 July applications are now open. A Faculty of Health Sciences Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing in Level 8. Admission requirements. 1. Have a recognized nursing qualification at NQF Level 7 or higher from any recognized higher learning institutions. Two, must be a registered nurse slash midwife with a Nursing Council of Namibia, HPCNA. Three, have a minimum of 2 years working experience as a nurse slash midwife in any health facility. Four, must write a short essay describing the motivation for pursuing postgraduate diploma in community health nursing. Qualification duration, 1 year. Mode of delivery, full-time. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Felvicha University, where everyone is an achiever. And we continue with our world...
With the rudeness of
yeah
his actions. And I mean, Helmut, look, I like the guy, né? I actually like Ruto. My concerns is just he's obviously trying to give that continental welcoming approach to the rest of the world. Personally, I don't know the man, obviously, but what I've observed is he's willing to talk about discussions, for example, like the second Urban Africa, the AU Urban Forum that
you had. Yeah, that.
And then he sat there on the stage talking about literally how bad Africa's largest
slum,
which is, it went from a shanty town to a slum, how bad it's become in terms of living standards for many Kenyans in Nairobi. And I was just sitting there thinking to myself, and how many presidents did you guys have that you could have sorted this out? How many presidents did you guys have with how many governments and how many ministers did you guys have? And at the heart of that, obviously, we are obviously very far from the discussion of anti-corruption and
on just, the continent, and, way and, really
and just good governance entirely. And you know, when you have to ask, like Ramaphosa technically is doing with this decision, is find it in yourself, in your governments, and in your national planning to think about a continent-wide approach.
Yeah.
Ramaphosa has space to do so. President Nandi and Daitwa...
Ramaphosa has a lot of space. President
Nandi and Daitwa probably does have space to do so as well. I don't know about President João Lourenço and his cabinet's capability in terms of their space. But I can tell you specifically, from what I see in terms of just basic stability politically, SADC does have the space. SADC can achieve some of these goals. But the downside is we know who's going to dominate it. Mm-hmm. We know. We know it's going to be the South Africans, the Zimbabweans, possibly the Zambians, possibly the Angolans that could dominate, because they would have money to throw at such a particular endeavor. Hamoud, we couldn't even say yes under President Geingob to co-host the African Nations Cup with Botswana. We couldn't even say yes. We couldn't even scrounge a 5 billion together. Namibian dollars, not 5 billion US.
Mm.
Was it 4 billion? One of the two. We couldn't even scrounge a few money together. And even try, and at that stage, try to get the stadiums up to international CAF and FIFA standards. We couldn't even do that.
We haven't done that.
So we don't know a guy who knows how to paint and knows how to use a hammer and then use a little bit of cement and then knows how to use a wheelbarrow and then gets it up to standard. So we don't know such guys.
We all know a lot of those guys. The problem is they're all either saying, I underquoted you, or that means they're terrible at their own math. Poor Namra now has to explain to their staff at the border, you know what? You remember those houses we promised you? Yeah, they're not coming anytime soon.
Yeah, just use your sleeping bag. Just a little bit more.
Just a little bit more.
Yeah, and make that campfire just that little bit more.
Yeah. Now, on the African continent, they say, you know, because, look, you have to understand that for all these things to come into fruition, things must start on a governance level.
Yeah, it has to.
things has to start on a governance level. And
otherwise, you'll hear stories of like Malawi, where they've been building a highway, Kama for, was it Uganda? What was the joke back in 2010? They were building a highway for like 20 years.
For 20 years. That's the problem. Money has been disappearing. For 20 years.
A highway.
Unless that highway is from Earth to our Lord in heaven.
It
doesn't make sense.
I didn't understand. At that stage, I didn't have a perspective yet of how big Uganda was. Until my brother, who was there, and he heard the story that the Irish, because Ireland is part of the EU, the Irish were reconsidering their development project investment in Uganda because this highway is taking 10 years to be built, or 20 years to be built. But the money just keeps evaporating.
The money just keeps, I think I have two phrases. The money, new words. The money either just keeps, keep Mozambiquing, or the money just keep.
I think it's Mozambique.
The money just keep fish rotting, or the money just keep sonangoling.
You know, all that.
Yeah, all that.
It doesn't find the right bank account.
Yeah.
It continuously finds the wrong bank account.
You see, first of all, biggest mistake. We have turned public office into a career option.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people now have, all you just have to do, plus is the easiest thing you can do, that and be, starting a church. All you just have to,
Or like working in the South African Police Service.
Yeah, it's much easier.
Where there's a slash fund, built, they just come and build you your house a wall. Uh-huh. Your house has a wall.
And then they'll build a wall.
But you see, just see this building contractor show up and smash down your wall and build you a new wall.
Yeah.
Just to say, Now we've tainted you.
Now whatever you see
said
us
yes
doing,
to the wall. Yeah.
And you report it.
Just know.
You know what? You know that beautiful wall around your house. Ah, yeah. Thank you very much. Nice wall. Oh yeah, it is. Except the wall may be white, but we're now going to be using it as a blackmail. Now you can't say anything about what we are going to do.
Mm.
Because if you say something like that, that wall we built for you,
it's going to end up as part of Exhibit 1 at the National Prosecuting Authority in South Africa.
You see, that is the reason why I believe we have some serious, we are going to work in silos as a continent. Different countries are just not going to work together because of things like that.
Mm.
You are a highway for, for 10, 20 years. And there's one conversation I think we are not having also on a continental level, on an AU level, is which government wants to adopt which governance system?
Yeah.
I'm not saying which one of them wants to be a dictator. We already have a bunch of those. But I think that's partly the problem.
No, it is. It is actually the problem because you will see how.
Imagine having a term limit with Museveni. How do you think that conversation is going to go? He's not going to like
that. What's the guy from Cameroon?
Paul Biya.
Yeah, Biya, who doesn't even sometimes know where he is. There's this one article that outlined all the times that Biya did not know whether he is president of the country, where he finds himself, who he's shaking hands with, why he's here, because you can clearly see from all of this, this is actually dementia that the man suffers from. The man actually suffers
That
from.
Happens when you're that age.
Yeah, this is what the man actually suffers
Not
from.
Not all the time, but it does happen.
But for some reason, homeboy is still being kept in power.
There are a lot of African leaders that you can imagine people like our president and the South African president, the president of Botswana, would not want to sit across the table from and have a topic of term limit with.
Yeah.
Why? Because that will rattle a lot of nerves. A lot of people that have, there are people that are in their 40s that does not know a different president apart from homeboy.
Apart from Museveni and Biya. And these are facts.
These
are ugly facts.
Look, these are facts, yes. Unfortunately, the thing is, that's why I'm saying that the part of the conversation we're not having on African colonies. Can we decide which governance system or which economic system does one country have to adopt? Because what if, take for example, one country stands up and says, you know what, I don't want to go with the American political or economic model. Yeah. I want to go with the Chinese political and economic model.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do we deal with that? If an African leader just stood up and said, you know what, I have a problem with the American model. I want to adopt the Chinese model. Or someone says, you know what,
to use my country's model.
I came up with a new model of governance. Or I want to go with the Swiss way of doing things.
What's the Swiss way?
Those guys will vote on everything, and they don't have a president, not in a sense that a lot of us have.
Or understand the president.
And understand the president be, in terms of just power and position and all that. There are a lot of governance system that goes beyond 5 years, election every 5 years and the 2 years term limit. Mm. That's a predominantly Western model. And by Western, I mean mostly American model. Mm. Well, the Swiss have their own, the Chinese have their own. And take, for example, when you come to Namibia, Namibia has their own. Botswana, there are different nuances in terms of what the constitution allows.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to things like the sovereignty and pandemic preparedness, that brings up two of the questions that will come up when you are talking about pretty much anything on the African continent, be it education, agriculture, infrastructure, and all those things. Money.
Yep. But I want to ask the next question. Remember our central bank, AU central bank conversation? You're worried about which president is going to be in charge of a thing.
Yeah.
Whose money is going to bankroll who? And who will say yes for some of the calamitous situations taking place on the continent?
Like pandemic?
No, not like pandemic. Because the thing is, you will need the money to respond.
Yeah.
So we know that the pandemic response and disease control function, we know what should be done. It's just a question of what money are we using?
I have what may sound like an answer for you from Africa CDC website.
Yeah.
Yeah. This from 2025, where they said, newly launched Africa Epidemic Fund to strengthen health security. That's the AFEEF referenced in the decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other fund, what's the other fund's name?
Which one?
There's another one right next to it. It was three funds.
Pandemic fund instruments.
Yeah.
You have domestic resources. Now on the Africa Epidemics Fund. Yeah. The AF, that's for Africa. Yeah. The AFEF. Yeah. Africa Epidemic Fund.
Mm.
On the Africa CDC, this is what it says. The Africa Epidemic Fund is now operational. This is from 2025, put that in mind. Providing the Africa Center for Disease Control and Prevention, Africa CDC, with flexible funding and support, funding to support countries across the continent in outbreak preparedness and response.
No, but the question is still, Hamid, because this sounds like voluntary contribution situations, like specifically with each country's contributions that we did the other day.
Yeah.
Where they are.
Yeah.
Since we must now send three people to the IMF World Bank spring meetings to go talk about an African central bank template, the question is still, now that let's say things move slowly, progress slowly. I'm now playing a little bit of devil's advocate. Things now progress now nicely. Everybody becomes chummy with each other all on the continent. And now we have to make this make or break decision of, okay, so are we going to go for a central bank? Are we going to go for a continental military response unit, and a central bank.
Oh yeah, there's that.
And a central bank is obviously there to manage a currency. What will the African currency be?
Forget the currency. Let's start from the very the elephant in the room. You see, this one thing I like about our job and our station.
Mm.
We got to be as politically incorrect as possible. Number one, 10 years to build a highway. You are stealing the money. Now, that money, would you put, even if an African Central Bank was established.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of, and you have a lot of commercial banks that is regulated by, across the continent by the central bank.
Mm.
Would you put that money in any of those banks?
But then it means the thing is actually failing. Remember what you just said about, okay, let's now have to choose now upon it now becoming like a common market, a single continent body. Who will be the first president on the African continent to lead Africa? And then you've got guys like Museveni and Paul Biya. You literally, if we start from there, we won't be able to agree on the common framework of who is allowed to govern for how long.
Another one. DJ Khaled. Another one.
Another one.
Yeah. Another one. Now, when you look at, was that when we looked at the urban and rural development on the African continent?
Yeah.
What's of the big, I think that was when you looked at the urban and rural development or some kind of investment discussion on an African level.
Yeah.
What's one of the biggest problem that Africa has in terms of finance? A lot of money is not on the continent.
Yes. However, so SADC is different. Helmut, that's why I like bragging about SADC.
Uh-huh.
You see, if you had to go and read up on, remember what the UN is shouting on behalf of ASCAMA is the sustainable management of the financing, the loans that African countries owe.
Mm-hmm.
And you go look and read, you know, individually what some of those cases are at, on the IMF and the World Bank scenarios, or you read under that subject matter and you go look at what is Africa's issue. Then you go realize that its previous presidents
and their executives,
Or their cabinets,
yeah,
that borrowed money, that made rich expensive promises, ne?
Yeah.
And now the next administration has to now come and work this expensive promise off. It's a Mozambique. They were trying to hide it, remember?
Yeah.
From the parliament of Mozambique.
He's close.
And they got close until, you know, someone kept asking for the money back, and it was literally the American or the Swiss banks.
I think it must be the Americans, because the Swiss were in cahoot.
Yeah. So someone was asking for the money back, and they were continuously sending letters and emails and correspondence, proof of correspondence to someone in the Mozambican parliament. It was in the parliament because it came to the parliament level.
Mm-hmm.
And they were trying to hide this loan. Now, if you're trying to hide a loan,
$2 billion.
Ask yourself, how many times has this happened across the continent, Helmut?
Thank you.
Because if this can happen in dingy old Mozambique,
yeah,
ne, what do you think probably happened in a place, for example, let's say Central African Republic?
Oh, I know something that happened somewhere. Namibia, fish rot. You see, 2020?
No, but we didn't loan money for fish rot.
We stole money. Point of correction, Dwight and I are still broke. They stole money.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Look, I find that information blackout very suspicious.
The one from the Fisheries Observer.
Exactly.
Fund. Exactly.
You have, it's things like that. That's why I'm saying that even if you were to come up with a central bank on the African continent, that will regulate a lot of, that will regulate all across the continent, commercial banks.
Yeah.
Who's going to put money in there?
Exactly. Who's going to put their money at?
Who's going to put their money in there? Because the point
at of that level of exposure,
the point of stealing money is to hide it somewhere where no one is gonna find it.
No, Helmut, that's not the point of putting money in a central bank.
Who puts money in central bank?
The central bank obviously has to manage a currency. The question is,
yeah, they have to manage a currency.
The question is, who's willing to say yes for their currency to be replaced by this continental currency? Whose economy is going to carry this currency?
Look, you don't have to replace it. You could just have like the EU did. I mean, they all have their individual currencies and Yes. You can have the euro on a large scale.
Yes, but there's one big concern of the euro. The concern is each of the countries still have their central banks.
Yeah.
Né? But they're all dispensing euro. Yeah. But the European Central Bank is making a decision that's technically not recognized by the constitution of each of its member countries. That's one of the issues with the euro.
So that would be the issue here.
That'll be the issue here. Because your money is a national symbol.
Yeah.
Like your president, like the coat of arms of the government or the president, and like the national flag. Now, the concern here is it's a double-edged sword. It's a sword that is technically cutting in both directions.
Yeah.
Firstly, who's willing to say no? Who's willing to say yes for their economy to carry other African economies? So we've got the whole of SADC. SADC is stable.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you take Madagascar, you know, they were wild for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then tap.
Problem solved.
No, not solved. It just went silent. And that guy is sitting with the other heads of state in SADC at the heads of state table.
Awkward.
Which was truly awkward. And then there's Mozambique, who was causing all manner of chaos just because the lawyer of the opposition party was calling foul without giving proof, but then he almost got shot. And then that just went everywhere because the candidate from that party was then calling all manner of situations, which also points towards a situation of there's something wrong with Mozambique that we don't really understand. Is it level of education? Is it level of media? Is it level of access to information from credible sources? Because it was all started by that opposition guy. He said, yeah, things are rotten, and then he runs off to Portugal.
You know one thing I like about, you know why I like to reference that if my comedy career fails, I'm starting a church or a political party?
Okay.
Because I've come to learn people, you know, look, it's very easy to lie to people. Telling them the truth, that's a nightmare. Lie to them. Oh, easy peasy. That is the biggest problem, and you can see this, and this is not just in Africa,
yeah.
The entire Western world. Look, what I don't understand. I'll just use Europe as an example here, and a lot of guys, the billionaires that have hoarded all the resources, have convinced the right wing guys that the reason why you don't have all the resources is these immigrants that are even more broke than you are.
And who are running away from a war.
Which we started.
Yeah.
And you have, a lot of, especially a significant part of Western Europe has a thriving conservative groups.
Yeah.
That has significant backing from billionaires.
Yeah.
Who are funding them to hate immigrants that are in Europe because of the chaos that the billionaires caused.
Yep. No one else caused it.
The billionaires ran around the world, caused all kinds of problems. When those people from those countries ran to stable countries, which is the countries of those billionaires, the very same billionaires, using the money that they got from the resources they stole, they fund now anti-immigration movements. If you really don't like movement, like at this point, every right-wing individual, more like conservative individual, the question they must ask themselves is, these people are here. Why? Name one person that will leave their country because it's too comfortable.
Well, there's a whole bunch of Namibians I know.
Not those ones that are going to Europe and say, our country is at war, seriously. There's the internet now. Everyone Google
like
that.
Like I said, there's a whole bunch of Namibians.
Look, the thing is,
and I think they're like 10, 20.
Look, all you just have to do is look at it from a colonial standpoint. A lot of white people showed up in Australia, showed up in Africa because, there was a lot of nature, there was a lot of resources hoarding by by a bunch of related royal guys in Europe. They were running away from a bunch of high social elites, basically stealing all the resources for themselves.
Yeah.
So right now, and this is the biggest problem with a lot of people, I'm not into politics. People that run around saying I'm not into politics are the easiest to lie to, yeah. Because they're very easy to feed a lot of garbage. Take the UK, for example. Nigel Farage's favorite line that helped him get the UK out of the EU was what? You know, this it's the EU's fault we have immigration problem. It's the EU's fault we have this problem. It's the EU's fault we have this problem. Those problems will be solved if we get out of the EU. Then they got out of the EU. How do we?
And then they're still saying, no, we're still waiting for the money back from the EU for what the EU promised us. You're like, what are you talking about, brah?
Look, I think for any citizen with even a fiber or two of brain cells,
yeah,
they would have sat there and thought, you know what, basically compare and contrast. What are the positives of being of being in the EU?
Mm.
And what are the negatives of being in the EU?
No, they didn't do that.
They made up a lie,
Helmut. Apparently they would get a whole 300 billion back every year from the EU, which still has not materialized.
You remember that?
And it was a lie.
We had this. I think we had a discussion on a national level similar to that. I think that was during Gengob's administration with regards to SACU.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you had this polarized point of view on whether or not Namibia.
Oh no, that polarized point still exists.
It still exists.
They are now just silent.
Uh-huh.
It still exists. I always love waiting for them to talk up because then I ask them, okay, so what can we do? It's not about growing tomatoes, please, or growing potatoes, please.
No,
let's hear your trade substitution theory.
Just compare and contrast. What are the pros and cons?
Last time I checked, GWM is not manufacturing in Namibia.
Okay, right. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying,
my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm.
Just keep more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. How can Africa fight pandemics? Look, all they just had to do, all the African Union had to do was bring together a couple of tribes from, I know three from Namibia. Don't want to mention any names, alleged witchcraft specialists. And you can also, consult a few in Uganda and Benin.
Alleged witchcraft specialist.
Nigeria, bring them together and let's do this thing spiritually from the look of it. Because,
so you now want to find who has the best witchcraft. And then we decide upon who becomes the winner or what.
Look, as long as a broom can do vrupa and it has air condition, I'm good. But if it doesn't have any of those, I don't know. How will MVA even investigate that?
They won't, Helmut. Who investigates person crashing into tree?
Just have a whole different division for natties.
How do you think that ambulance will respond if they see you hanging in the tree with the broom there?
We'll also have an aviation department.
Just remember, the broom is not an airplane. It's not an aircraft.
In Africa, it is. Nah, man. That's a lot of...
So my first suggestion still stands. Is this about seeing whose witchcraft is the best witchcraft in order to win the title of, doing this Pan-African thing together?
Look, you can make it, you can propose it as a sports, for the Olympics.
Mm.
But I don't think, that's not going to cut it. It's, I just like that in terms of transport.
Mm.
Yeah, I think our leaders would cut a lot of would cut a lot of cost on transport because instead of having the whole delegates, like the first people to lose their jobs would be bodyguards. You know, so all they just need is one excellent tate in the middle of Norway in the Kavango region protecting them all the way from here, but they're in Berlin. Every time they're threatening, there's like a lightning controlled all over.
Why is the guy in Berlin? Huh? Why is the guy in Berlin?
For the G7 summit, most. Maybe in G7. Nice. Now.
Oh, my goodness.
Africa is cool, guys. But look, the thing about, every discussion that we're going to have in terms of solving problems on an AU level or on a national level, even, and we can see this even on an individual level, it will always come down to one thing.
Mm.
A lot of funding is needed to get this to get the thing off the ground. And one thing that they point out in terms of this Africa Epidemic Fund is that this Africa CDC themselves, that this much anticipated development, now the establishment of the Africa Epidemic Fund, this much anticipated development is said to be a game changer, really. No longer constrained by bureaucratic hurdles, Africa CDC now have a flexibility to rapidly deploy funds where they are needed most. Before you deploy the funds, it must come from somewhere.
Mm.
And that somewhere is African Union member states. And these are the guys that have a problem contributing to the African Union operational budget itself. We have the money, but not just for not for collective use.
Helmut,
10 years highway for 10 years. Cheers. Okay.
There's a. I think there's a distrust issue between us.
I don't think you are right on that.
Between us Africans with each other. The distrust is obviously born from, you know, what are we trying to do? Are we trying to reach common goals, or are we trying more to hamper each other in achieving common goals? Because every time I can see the positives from a SADC perspective,
mm-hmm.
I get more updates about what SADC is doing. SADC now recently, when we spoke about the Security Council reform,
yeah.
SADC had a reform discussion. Where was the AU? Announcement or the AU publicity about their discussion of the UN Security Council reform. So in a SADC scenario, SADC is mobilizing itself. SADC is having relationship management workshops with each other. Yes, there's lovely buffet, they fly to each other, but still the relationship is being maintained so that you can at least see something tangible about, okay, now get to the next step, you know, Just get across the bridge. Get to the next step. And that's what we're starting to see. Even though Lobito was borrowed from Europe, because this was technically Europe's money, even these past 3 days at the Nimabe EU's business forum, the EU guys said literally, Lobito is a template of the Global Gateway investment, you know, to upscale, upgrade, expand, improve infrastructure, transport-wise, you name it, all the other aspects of infrastructure, and that specifically it's there to enhance the whatever aspect of a country. And Lobito is just rail. It's just railway. It's not road.
Cargo, rail.
Yeah, cargo, it's not road. It's not a combination of road and rail. It's just rail, cargo rail. The nice thing is it stops at multiple towns.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously have to see how the installation process goes. If it's just going to be two trucks
just
running side by side, then you can just go, oh, okay, it's an empty train coming down. It's a train full of stuff going that way. But if it's like what you see when actual when railway is deployed as an actual mobility function to make people and goods move, then you would see four lines of track. They would split at certain points, but you would, at the heart of everything, you'd at least still see two lines from a specific point run together and then connect the rest of the grid. Because a railway network runs, it almost looks like a grid itself.
Mm.
But the concern has been, okay, how do we get things moving? But what Lobito basically looks from the spirit and the ghost of what you hear from the people's words is that it sounds just like a cargo trade thing, which Bekele Thomas from the Technical Committee of the African Transport and Energy highlighted. Please don't make it look so obvious. Don't make it look so obvious. Whatever you do, Helmut, don't show that there is fragments, you know, gravel fragments in the last five cars of the locomotive. No, no.
Yeah. Look, if when the whole project, I'm talking about the Lobito Corridor, if the when the whole project is completed, and then we come to learn, or more like, well, confirm the suspicion that it's just the whole thing is just built to ship raw natural resources out of the continent. And we, like, I'm not going to listen to anyone that's going to start complaining.
Because we knew.
Yeah, not just the knowing part. You signed.
No, but the people that will be complaining will be us. The ones that didn't sign.
Oh, no, look. Well, when the signatures were signed, they were signed, or when all the agreements were made, you have to understand that I'm not going to pin this on the Europeans.
Mm.
They didn't storm in like they did when they were colonizing.
Yeah, and
they came
and
in.
And told you, you must take the money and you must build this thing.
No.
No,
they just sat across the table from you, gave you a proposal, and you said yes.
Yep.
They said sign here, you kept signing without breathing.
Yep.
So when someone like that swindles you, it's not, it's not
the shame on you.
Yeah, thank you.
Not you, Hamid.
there's the guy that basically signed. If you sign for something, and I think that's part of the problem, because by the time that the project reaches implementation, it's a different guy in the executive office.
Yep.
Now that guy will now have to answer a lot of questions to the people, like, okay, what's going on here? And it will be very easy for them to use the standard African, get out of jail free card. Well, it wasn't me. It was the previous guy.
Mm. Oh, I did not know.
I had no idea. I mean, I'm new here.
I didn't sign there. What are you talking about? That's not my handwriting.
Yep.
Oh, well. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see, Hamut. We'll have to observe. Yeah, the thing about manufacturing our own medicine, which Ramaphosa is also suggesting, once again, I hope he starts it, but there will also be a discussion of who monopolizes the intellectual property, who monopolizes, because this is medicine manufacturing. This is not T-shirt manufacturing.
Dwight?
There's literally a recipe.
Dwight?
Yeah?
The man who's at the top of the decision, we just used the entire Home Run show as a source of reference.
Yeah.
Is most likely going to face trial for having private banking at his farm.
Not private banking, Howard. For running a collection scheme in his own sofa.
Yeah.
So
you're either African Union saying we need to, we need to do this and this and this. We need to come up with the funds for this and this and this. And then there's money in your sofa. Oh, boy.
Yep.
Welcome to Africa.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Where there's never a dull day here.
Nope.
Never. Even here on the Home Run, there's never a dull day, guys.
Now,
it's actually interesting. We've never had a dull day, Helmut.
No. Look.
Except for the report that we planned for, but we threw out because the report was so squeaky clean Not even Handy Andy could find anything.
It was, you know, really, 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 really clean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And too short.
His thing, though, one thing that when you look at things like, Palapala Bank problem and the Mozambique problem and Fisher Road problem.
Palapala Bank. I was like, what? Palapala Bank?
Not everything that has cattle is a farm. Sometimes it can be a bank. I'm opposed to revolutionized the phrase, not everything that glitters is.
Household banking.
Household banking. And I think Palapala is the reason why South Africans must respect us. They must really, because you have to understand that,
who asked Namibia?
Yes, they must.
Okay.
Look. Guys, if you are going to pull off a heist, that's how you must do it. No one was harmed in that heist.
Yeah.
And then there's a bunch of you rookies that are running around stabbing people for cell phones. A heist of $1 million. And the heist was
Wasn't
so...
Wasn't it 10 million?
10 million?
They didn't steal a million.
Jeez.
They stole a lot of money.
Yeah, and not even the CCTV camera that filmed the whole thing. They're like, no, we are not here to damage property. We're just here for one thing. Money.
You know,
they got the money, brought it to Namibia, went to the north, created employment. Excellent idea.
You know, Ramaphosa could have kept this silent, Hamut. But he had to call that police officer.
I know a guy. That's the problem. It turns out not knowing a guy.
This whole report now of last week, the report that found that Ramaphosa should probably face some sort of reprimand.
Yeah.
That report is based on the police report, the actions of the police, that other report. That other report just literally says this, it was a police commander that responded. That guy is the issue.
Is it Arthur Fraser?
No, Fraser was former intelligence.
Yeah.
Arthur Fraser is a Zuma ally. You should watch out for Arthur Fraser.
Oh, that explains why he decided to toss the homeboy under the bus.
No. Arthur Fraser is the guy that called for, that didn't want to lock up Zuma.
But he played a significant role in this whole.
Arthur Fraser is the one.
Palapala Banking.
Arthur Fraser is the one that announced Palapala Banking. But Arthur Fraser is the guy that said yes. He was the correctional services guy, the chief of correction, that said yes. Zuma can go for a doctor's appointment, and everybody was like, "But doesn't this correctional service have a doctor?" Yes, we do, but he has a specialized... No. Whoa.
Since when?
And then they were like, no. He doesn't get his privileges. He has to sit his 21 days.
Here's one thing that was revealed. I did not actually fully understand about during apartheid, South Africa, which to an extent, obviously, that included Namibia, obviously, was running the governance system of parliamentary supremacy, where you have, the guys in parliament have the power that we now associate with the constitution. Mm. So, after independence, obviously that power shifted from parliamentary supremacy to constitutional supremacy, where with the not parliament, but the constitution having the final say about what the law is,
yeah.
Not some guy in parliament, which is actually a good idea. But they left out a part in the South African rules of parliament that says when a grievances, for example, is sent to parliament, then parliament has to vote in for them to decide on whether those grievances must face further inquiries, which is what the whole Palapala thing was supposed to happen with the Palapala farm.
Yeah.
They voted on it at that time ANC had the majority in parliament. So the overwhelming majority said no to forwarding the investigation to the impeachment committee.
Mm.
Yeah. That is a lot of power still contained in parliament, which is one of those things that was pointed out that, yeah, you guys must change this.
Mm.
Yeah, the Supreme Court just said this is still parliamentary supremacy, not constitutional.
Mm.
So just, remove that so that you can just leave the supremacy to the constitution.
Mm.
Yeah, so that...
Technically, the constitutional supremacy is clashing with parliamentary supremacy is clashing with constitutional.
Yep.
Wow, so they literally divorced a function from the constitution.
Yeah. So that's the rule of parliament now that they have to change. So moving forward, any South African president will never have the privilege of having, you know, even if you have the majority, you know, of parliamentarians from your party and you manage to convince them to vote against motion that will lead with you being investigated.
Yeah.
That is not going to cut it anymore. That was a serious collision between, constitutional and parliamentary supremacy. Which parliamentary supremacy is an old way of doing things. Because now we're running on, you know, the rule of law, the whole idea that, the law should, everyone should be subject to the law, including public officials, that includes the
parliamentarians president. Have, what's that thing's name, Helmut?
The whole immunity thing.
Yeah, they've got that. Parliamentary immunity.
Whoever came up with the whole immunity thing. Okay. That was, first of all, it was a genius idea.
It was an awesome idea.
Yeah, it was an awesome idea. Look, that's what I would do if I was a mosquito. I was put in a committee that is investigating malaria. What do you think I'm going to do?
You would veto it.
I would veto it.
Every time.
Yep. Until tomorrow.
Same time, same place, guys. Don't worry. We don't give you boring shows.
No, we don't.
We actually give you some.
You know, now I want to watch a live show of it's either President Duma Boko or Netumbo or Ramaphosa just sitting with Paul Biya and Kagame and
asking them what is wrong with you guys?
Yeah, not that question. That's too straight. Guys, what's your take on term limit?
Mm.
World War III will start in that room.
Museveni will start. He will first smile and give you a response like, back when I was a young man.
You were a young man? Okay, you know what? Let's go.